as we look at this event in Jesus' life from from John chapter 5. It'd be good to get in the right book. It always helps to follow along if you're in the right spot. But we're going to be in John chapter 5, and we're going to spend really all of our time there. So if you wanted to follow along, it's just really going to be called verse by verse. And we're going to see as this event unfolds in Jesus' life what is happening, and to be able to make some of those applications to our life. And so this morning, we're really talking about getting well, how we can get well, how we can get healed. What about things in our life? We're not necessarily specifically talking about physical healing, because sometimes we go through struggles in life, and sometimes they're physical struggles, and sometimes there's lessons to be learned from them. We look through, even in the New Testament, some of the people had different ailments physically. We know that Timothy had a problem, we would probably say today, with his digestive system. And so Paul tells him, you know, to take a little bit of wine for your stomach's sake to settle things down and that kind of thing. That was more medicinal. And we know that Paul also had a thorn in the flesh that he struggled with. Perhaps even Peter also struggled near the end of his life, because that's a prophecy that Jesus had made, that when he got older, he would be taken around to places that he didn't necessarily really want to go. It sounds like there's other people taking care of him at some point. That was John in his old age, that he'd be in that situation. So sometimes there's physical things that we go through. But maybe this lesson, it can be applied spiritually, because Jesus applied it spiritually. It wasn't just a physical healing that was given and that Jesus wanted to grant and to bless this man with, but it was the spiritual, which was, in Jesus' words, much more important. And so we see here in verse 2 of John 5, there was in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool. In Aramaic, it was called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five colored colonnades. So that helps us to understand where this place is, a little bit about it. Back then, of course, the people knew exactly what was happening. And so when we see these events happening in Jesus' life, we know they're not just made up stories or a tale that was told, because it gives a certain time and place. When people are reading this, they say, I know where that is. I've been there. The fact is, it's in just outside the city of Jerusalem, just north of the temple area, and probably people had at least passed by there on a regular basis. If you're a little bit more visually oriented, maybe I've got a map that might help. I do have the map, I'm just not sure it's going to help. But it just kind of shows us the picture there of what the city of Jerusalem may have looked like back in the times of Jesus, where the temple is. And just north of that is a sheep gate, and that's described here. And north of that is where the Pool of Bethesda is. Here's a modern day photograph of what it may have looked like back then. And so it was just a place, perhaps, when people were coming to Jerusalem, especially for things like the Passover. And what would they want to do? They need to have a lot of animals coming into the temple area, and they bring them they're bringing some sheep. I wonder what gate they would be using. There is a horse gate, and then there's other gates, but they bring them through the sheep gate, and perhaps one of the reasons it's there is because there's a pool there, which would be what? It would be good for the animals to stop by and get a drink after a long day's journey. And so that's probably what this pool is. Because I think sometimes we think it's a swimming pool. This is great. It's chlorinated. It's $1.50 to get in. There's lifeguards on duty. It's not that kind of a pool. It's actually probably what we would call a natural spring. It was probably fed with water from underneath. And so it was a place probably where animals came to drink. And so it became an area where people would gather. And maybe it was a time where, even as people were coming into the city, they would be able to stop, like I say, get water for their animals and stand around and to catch up on the news and to find out what's happening. And so it would have been a popular meeting spot for people that were arriving at Jerusalem, especially during the times of the Passover and things like that, where they brought their animals. And so here there was a great number of disabled people. They used to lie there, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. People that would gather there because they had physical problems. They had challenges. Today, sometimes we call them disabilities. They were physically handicapped. They had struggles in their life, no doubt. And again, maybe they met there because they could see a lot of people coming in. And as people would enter the town before they got into the big city, it wasn't that big of a city, but before they maybe spent a lot of their money, maybe they would be able to help out with a dollar or two or a quarter or a shekel. They would be able to give to some of these poor people. So maybe it was a way that they could be able to get some money. So they could, you know, we would say beg, or to be at the side of the road where they could hopefully get a little bit of money so they could support themselves. In this age back then, of course, they did not have things like Social Security, disability, other types of government programs that could help them. So a lot of these people were on their own. Perhaps a lot of these people, the families had kind of gotten tired of helping them. They've given up on them. It's like there's not much more we can do. And their families may have gone on with their own lives, and here you are, somebody who's got a physical struggle, challenge, and now you don't have much hope left. You don't have much life left. And so now they're all gathered here. And you can imagine perhaps around this place, they would also share their own struggles with you'll never guess what I've been through. You know, well, when I was a kid, this happened. Well, how did you end up this way? Well, this is a story. Let me tell you what happened. Other people may be born that way. So it was just a place where they would be together. But we see it was the blind, the lame, paralyzed, anybody who had some kind of a challenge, a dysfunction. And this is where they were, a great number of people. Now, in a lot of the Bibles, they don't have verse 4. I'm going to read verse 4 because it is, for instance, in the King James. What the scholars would say is this verse is found in the later manuscripts, but not in the earlier manuscripts. So the thinking was that maybe this was inserted sometime later by somebody that was maybe kind of as a footnote trying to say, this is what was going on. This is what was being told of what was really happening in the area. Maybe in your Bible, it's a footnote at the bottom. To say, because you kind of, usually whenever you go from verse 3 to verse 5, you scratch your head and saying, am I missing something? You know, why did they leave that out? This is what verse 4 says. And again, there's question about whether this is found in the original. And we don't have the original, of course, but whether it's found even in the earlier manuscripts. This was the idea. From time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. The first one into the pool, after each such disturbance, would be cured of whatever disease he had. And so you would imagine, this is the second reason a lot of these people that had the physical challenges were there. Not only was it a place maybe where you could receive some money as people were passing by, not only was it a place where there were a lot of other people that were in a similar situation as you, and you could share your life stories and life struggles, and at least you had somebody to spend the day with, but now there's hope. Just once in a while, it seems. We don't know how often. And whether this actually happened or whether this is what the people thought, again, if it was a pool of water that had a spring that fed it underneath, maybe at once, sometimes there would be a big gushing of water as the water would come in to fill this pool. And sometimes maybe even the minerals, maybe there was some kind of a natural healing that may be able to take place as the people got into the water. We don't know if this was actually a miracle. It could very well have been a miracle. In Jesus' day, there was a lot of things that were happening in the spiritual level that really didn't happen regularly. Things like demon possession. Things like demons being able to take over people's lives and to control them even in a physical way. Maybe this was such a deliverance that God was working to overcome or to balance things as demons were working, and God saying, well, I'm going to provide at least some opportunity from a spiritual viewpoint. Now angels would come down, stir up the water. The first person in would be cured. And that also helps us to understand what this man is saying. This disabled man, what was he saying? He's got some challenges and some struggles. And what does he say to Jesus? So there was one there that had been an invalid for 38 years. And when he saw Jesus, when Jesus saw him lying there, he learned that he had been in that condition for a long time. And you read for a long time, you say 38 is a long time to have any problem, to have any struggle. I don't care if it's a physical problem. Maybe it's an emotional problem. Maybe it's a relationship problem. 38 years, are you kidding me? Spiritual problem? 38 years, that's a long time to have any problem, to be carrying this around. And so it's going to help us understand, as these things are coming to view and as this conversation continues, what's going on? Why are Jesus and this man having this kind of conversation? I think it's important for us to see. It's important for us to realize, even in our own lives, some conversations that sometimes we have with God. We call it prayer. We say, well, what's really going on? What is it that you really want? And so here, maybe it's an understatement to say, is kind of the most concerning question found in the Bible. And Jesus looked at him, asked him, well, do you want to get well? Well, What do you mean, it's been 38 years. What do you mean, do I want to get well? I'm by the pool. What do you mean, do I want to get well? I mean, if you were in this condition that I'm in, wouldn't you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Well, that's a strange question, isn't it? The question for us, especially from a spiritual viewpoint, is this. Do you want to get well? You don't understand. For 38 years, and you're asking, of course I want to get well. No, but do you really want to get well? Do you really want to see change? Do you really want to get out of the situation that you're in? You see, Jesus is never going to come into your life and make you do something you don't want. And in essence, Jesus is always going to ask the question, do you want me in your life? Well, do you want to go to heaven? Do you want life to be better? Do you want to be healed emotionally? Because if you really don't want it, he's not going to force it upon you. You've got to answer, yes, this is what I really want. Of course this is what I want. So you know what? The answer, do you want to get better? It's a yes or no answer. I mean, either you do or you don't. Let me know, do you want to get better? Surely you've had time to think about it. Surely even there's been opportunities when the angel does come and stir the water. How badly do you want to get in there so you'll be well? You must be thinking all the time, do you really want to get better? Yes or no? So this man answers, oh, there's not a yes or no answer. You know what he has? He has some excuses. And sometimes when Jesus says to us, do you want to be made whole? Well, yeah, but you just don't understand. Life is hard. There's challenges. There's obstacles. It's too difficult. So this is what the man says. Sir, he replied. Now, again, this is kind of interesting, isn't it? Because he doesn't recognize who Jesus is. We're going to find that out even later on. When he went and talked to the religious leaders, they said, well, who healed you? He said, I'm not really sure. Don't know who it was. Didn't get his name. Didn't give me his business card. Don't know who it was. So he says, sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone goes in ahead of me. Do I want to get well? Well, I've tried. I've tried. I can't do it. Well, do you want to get well? Well, I've kind of been hoping that somebody else is going to come along to give me a hand. If somebody was just here, they could lift me or they could throw me, whatever they need to do. I just need to get in the water first. If there was somebody else, kind of tried. No one else is around. Jesus, do you want any more excuses? Because I can come up with a few more if you need them. Do you want to get well? I'm not really sure if I want to get well. It's kind of interesting, like I say, he didn't understand who Jesus was because his comment was, well, when the water is stirred, I can't get in. You see, an angel comes down, if that's really what was happening, the angel comes down, stirs up the water, I can't get in. And we know that Jesus is much more powerful than an angel. The angel just stirred the water. Jesus, you don't know who you're talking to. And maybe that's sometimes our problem. We don't really understand who I know, I pray to God. But do you really understand the power that God has? That if you really want to get well, Jesus can make you well. He can. Do we really know who we're talking to? Or do we just think, oh, sir, you don't understand. You see, even today we can have lots of excuses, can't we? Do you want to get well? I've given up trying to get well. I'm in a bad relationship. My finances are all messed up. I have a job that I hate. Life is not going well. But I've been stuck in this place for such a long time. I cannot imagine anything different. We become so used to our pain and our suffering and our misery. And it also almost becomes normal to us. We develop some coping mechanisms. We develop ways that we can make it through the day. It's been a long time. Can't imagine things getting better. You see, at one time, after the first few months or the first year or two maybe of being handicapped, being disabled, having challenges, having emotional issues, having spiritual struggles, for the first while I thought, I have some hope. Tomorrow will be a better day. God will get me out of this. Things will get better and I will be made well. But after 38 years, it's hard to blame the guy for saying, really? It's been a long time. I've given up trying to get better, trying to be made whole. As a matter of fact, I've given up on my relationship. I've given up on being a good worker and being productive at my job. And I've given up trying to get out of debt. I've given up on all this. It's just been so long. All I do now is I cope from day to day. Been a Christian for a long time. Been struggling for a long time. I mean, if you're like me, when you become a Christian, oh, hey, it's exciting, man. The first day, the first week. You know, you can just imagine spiritual victories. You can imagine God doing works in your life that you'll be a blessing to other people and you'll be able to share your faith and you'll see other people coming to Christ. And I mean, being a Christian at first is exciting, but after a while you kind of get weighed down with sins. You struggle day to day. You have stuff in your life that's just been around for so long, it's become a part of who you are. And I know, if you're like me, you've got some excuses along the way. Well, I've tried, but it's been rough. And I was hoping that some people at the church, they'd be carrying me along a little bit, but you know, you can't depend on people. I've been at it for so long, got my excuses, and now I am spiritually average. I am spiritually mundane. Life just goes on. No joy, no happiness, no hope, no plans, no dreams for the kingdom. We just struggle along day to day spiritually, hoping that when we die, we'll go to heaven. But you don't understand. It's been this way for so long. It's all I know. I've actually become quite comfortable with it. I fit in. And it fits around me. And so I'm just lying around this pool at Bethesda. I've got my mat. Got a few snacks. Don't have cable yet. But I'm moving in to the pool of Bethesda. What do you mean? Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Not sure if I want to get well, because if Jesus heals me, I'm so used to living like this. If Jesus heals me, I'm going to have to go back to my family. I'm going to have to go back to being responsible. I'm going to have to go out and get a job and actually work 8 hours a day. I'm actually going to have to change everything about my life. And whatever excuses I've used to this point, I can't use them anymore. Again, in our lives, it's just so easy to say, well, you know, the place where I'm in right now, you know, the job where I'm at, it's just terrible. Don't know if I could stay there another day. I need something different. It's killing me spiritually. And Jesus says this, do you want to get well? Well, I'm kind of comfortable here. I've been here for 18 and a half years. I know some people here. I know my job here. I know it is a very challenging and difficult and a painful place to work, but I'm used to it. I've learned how to deal with it. And I can even self-medicate. Do you want to get well? Do you want to make the changes necessary to get well? Do you want to even say, well, if I'm going to get out of this job, that would mean I'd have to start applying to other jobs. Right? I'm going to have to start taking this seriously to move on. Or, if we're talking about financially, do you want to get well? Yeah, I'd love to get well, but I also, if I'm going to get well, does that mean I have to give up spending? Does that mean I have to stop going to the mall all the time and I can't get the new car? If I want to get well financially, if that's where my sickness is, don't want to make those changes. You see, the fact is, whatever we're struggling with, whether it's those illustrations or you got one of your own, quite often our true answer is, no, don't really want to get well. Life could be better, but I don't know if I'm ready for big changes. Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? I've been so used to being at this point in my life, and I've got all of my excuses and all the people I can blame for why I am where I am, and it's their fault, and if I got well, I couldn't blame them anymore. And sometimes in our pain, we enjoy blaming others, like hurting other people. Yeah, mom and dad, it's your fault I turned out this way. Yeah, my boss at work, it's his fault that life is like this. And if those credit card companies hadn't given me such a high limit, it's their fault. See, it's always somebody else's fault. And I get used to blaming other people and hurting other people. And maybe if I was made well, more of the real blame and the responsibility now would be on me. One other thing. Sometimes when people are made well, it's the codependents that wouldn't be happy. Because now they would have to make changes because they're always used to helping and serving. And so their life becomes, maybe you know some people like that. Kind of goes like this. Husband's an alcoholic. Nobody really knows. But he gets drunk just about every night. And twice as bad on the weekends. And so mom's job is to cover it up, make excuses, take care of him. Boy, what would ever happen? What would happen to her? Because she's used to this pain. She's adjusted to her life. She has found her place to be needed. Well, he gets sober. She's out of her job. She's got to find something else to do. Maybe something else to complain about. Something else to be upset about. She's got to come up with some more excuses of her own because she can no longer say, the reason I'm the way I am is because he's the way he is. Works like that in many areas. Well, do you want to get well? That's Jesus' question. And so we can make a lot of excuses and we're not sure if we want to get well. But evidently this man, Jesus understands. This man does want to get well because Jesus blessed him. Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. Now he could have said, I thought I already told you I was an invalid. I cannot walk. I can't do this. But he trusted Jesus enough. Evidently he must have known something about Jesus or some type of the authority that Jesus had that he actually got up. And apparently his challenge would have been that he was lame. He could not walk on his own. But now, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. And so at once, immediately, it was a split second decision. It was a change he made. I'm going to get better. Life is going to change. I'm willing to take on the responsibility. I'm willing to get rid of the excuses. I'm not going to come to this pool anymore. Get up and walk. So at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. Isn't that amazing? It's a miracle. 38 years. I'm sure everybody would have known this man that had at least passed by the pool, by the sheep gate. The pool of Bethesda. 38 years, you know what? Even if you only pass by once a year, after 38 years passing by, you recognize the guy, and now he's walking around the city. But not everybody's happy. Not everybody is that happy that he now can walk. Because the day he took, the day that this took place was a Sabbath day, and the Jews said to the man who's healed, "It's amazing. We're so glad you've been healed. This is wonderful. Praise the Lord. This is exciting. A brand new start in life. How did this happen? I mean, this is like, let's get the news reporters. Let's get some photos. Can I do a selfie with you? Let's do something. This is so exciting. Can we have a prayer? Praising God. A miracle's happened." Oh, well, that wasn't quite the response. The response was, "It's the Sabbath day and the law forbids you to carry. What do you think you're doing?" Like, don't you think at least our first response should be, "Glad you can walk. Don't carry the mat." No, the first thing is, who cares if you're healed? Who cares if you can walk? You're breaking the law of God, which actually was not the law of God. The Old Testament does say do not work on the Sabbath, but it was not specifically spelled out everything you could carry on the Sabbath. The Jews had actually added to this and made their own rules about how much weight, how far. It was very extensive about the work of the Sabbath. So this man, what choice does he have? If he gets up and he leaves his mat there, I guess he'd be charged with littering, right? We'd have some environmental company coming in saying, "This is a mat. A guy's been laying on it for 38 years. We've got to have a hazmat." Right? What choice does he have? He picks up his mat. He's going to go home. That's all he wants to do. Oh, no. We are not happy. Maybe more than anything, we're not happy you've been healed. But the bigger thing that many, many people have, this is the problem they have. We have a problem because Jesus healed you. Now, if you were healed by the doctors, I think we'd be okay with that. If you've been really struggling emotionally and you surrender your life to Christ and He heals you, a lot of people will not be happy to hear your story. Now, if you tell them you went to the psychotherapist, got a new medication, and finally you're straightened out, that's big news. We can even put that on Facebook. But you see, when Jesus enters the picture, when something miraculous happens, it's like, no, that's not what we're used to. That's not what we want to hear. That's outside of what we accept as being true and real. Doesn't seem to be scientifically proven. They forbid the carrying of a mat, so they say. The law forbids you to do that. So when Jesus changes your life, you cannot expect everyone to be happy. As a matter of fact, to the people that are religious, you know, we've got to be very careful about being judgmental about other people. You know, sometimes we think we've got it all figured out. We've got all the answers. We know all of the issues. We know all of the circumstance. We know all of the history. We know how everyone thinks and how they interact. And now, I'm not saying the Bible's not clear on a lot of issues, because it surely is. But sometimes we judge beyond the scriptures and we judge people's hearts. And their motivation. We can even judge their experiences and say, well, Well, you see, I didn't have that experience, so I don't think you can have it either. Well, maybe God did work in a way that was outside the norm. He can do that. He is God. But we have to be careful that we aren't nitpicking at the very minor things, like we're not sure, but you're breaking the law by carrying the mat and not being able to rejoice people that have been healed. There's something bigger. So the man replied, "The man who made me well, he said, pick up your mat." Why? That's why I'm carrying the mat around. He told me to. He said, stand up and walk. This is what I'm doing. And so they said, who is this one who told you to pick your mat up and walk? And the man who was healed had no idea who it was. So he, at that point, didn't even know it was Jesus. But Jesus had slipped away into the crowd and was not there. And so evidently, Jesus didn't want to make a big scene. He didn't do this for a big show. Because, you know, sometimes people get the idea that Jesus just did miracles so that everybody would ooh and ah. It would bring all the crowds in. It would just be so amazing. I think Jesus healed this guy because this guy needed to be healed. That's why. No other reason. Because Jesus does care about us. Jesus doesn't want to just make a big show all the time. He cares. He loves us. He wants us to be whole. And so Jesus had slipped away in the crowd and we would say gone out of sight. And so later Jesus found him at the temple. This is where the spiritual side comes into the story. Jesus met up with this man again. "See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." Now, you could read this one of two ways. Either this man was well at some point in his life, earlier on in his life. Maybe he had done something that was illegal, immoral, ungodly, against the law of God. Maybe he had even been injured in the committing of some kind of a crime. And so now he was paralyzed. He may have committed some kind of a sin, and simply because of that sin, God punished him. And that was a big a theory, or even a theology of people in Jesus' day, that bad things happen to bad people, good things happen to good people. So if anything bad happens to you, like with Job, which was probably about 5,000 years before this, Job was probably before even Abraham, Job's friends said, "Well, you've sinned. What have you done? If you just repent of your sin, you'll get all better." Well, that wasn't the issue. That wasn't the problem. That wasn't the struggle. Again, it happened in John just a few chapters later. Someone said, "Well, here's a man who's been born blind. Who sinned, he or his parents?" And Jesus said, "It's not him or his parents. The reason he's been blind is so that the healing could take place and God could get glorified." And maybe that's similar to what Dan said around the Lord's table. Sometimes bad things happen so that we can realize all the blessings we do have in our lives. There's other reasons bad things happen, or even physical challenges. So, but something worse could happen. Could you imagine? He's paralyzed for 38 years. The next question is, what could be worse than that? Like blind and paralyzed? Is that what he's talking about? No. He's talking about, no matter how bad your condition here, no matter what your challenges and your struggles are in this life, there's even something worse than that could happen than you even not being healed. Is that you'd be in a situation like that, but worse? Forever. That's a long, long time. Forever! That's in a place called hell. Because that's the spiritual problem. You get your life right with God. You make sure you're in a relationship. You take care of the spiritual issues. You make sure your sins are forgiven. Or else something even worse would happen. Forever separated from God. Forever in misery. Forever disabled. Forever around a pool even worse than that of Bethesda. Make sure you're physically whole now. But are you spiritually whole? And again, that's a big challenge for us, because sometimes we are physically whole. And we think, oh, I'll take care of the spiritual things later. that I think I'm doing okay spiritually because I just have a good feeling about it. But there's got to be more to it than that. The man went away and he told the Jews that it was Jesus who made him well. You see, when good things happen and you know it happens because of Jesus, he didn't have to go back to tell the religious leaders. And he may even have realized at this point in Jesus' ministry, if he goes back to tell them it was Jesus, they're not going to be happy with him or Jesus. But when good things happen, how can you be quiet about it? You find out it's Jesus, well, I'll keep that one a secret. I don't want to let anybody else know. No, you tell other people. I'm sure this man went around and told others that Jesus healed him. Why? Because maybe Jesus will heal others as well. If you have been redeemed and saved and been made whole spiritually, wouldn't you want to go tell other people that are suffering, that are still by the pool of Bethesda, to say, Jesus can make you whole. He made me whole. He changed my life. If you want Jesus, if you want him to make you whole, he will make you whole. We know he'll always do that spiritually. He may not always do that physically, emotionally, relationally. He may not always do that. Sometimes he'll just be with us through the struggle. But we know spiritually he will always make us whole. That's why he came. So we end with this verse back in Matthew chapter 8. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to Jesus. He drove out the spirits with the word, healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and he carried our diseases. He just didn't heal them. Even the physical challenges and struggles and disabilities people had, Jesus did not only heal them. He had to carry them. You know what he did? He put them upon himself. Isaiah says that he bore our burdens. For people to be healed, it goes on Jesus. Even more so spiritually, the only way we can be healed spiritually is to say to Jesus, would you be willing to take my sin, my struggles, my pain, even the consequences that I have created in my own life, Jesus, would you take that upon yourself so that they would be lifted off of my life and placed on his life? And that's what he did when he went to the cross. And that's why Jesus says there's salvation found nowhere else except in Jesus. No other religion, no other person, no other prophet. You can't even save yourself. It's too late for that if you've already sinned. The only hope you have, even at the pool of Bethesda, is for Jesus to come and say, do you want to be made well? Jesus will take our burdens, our sins, our struggles upon himself. If today you want that for your life, you do have to be tired of living the way you're living. You have to be at the end to say, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to go another day like this. I may have been going through struggles because of my own choices. Maybe things have happened that are no fault of my own. And maybe I've even gotten to the point where I'm comfortable where I'm at. And I've been blaming other people. But if you want a new start, a new life, if you want to be born again, that happens in Jesus. And if you want that today, you can have that today. That's an invitation Jesus gives. If you want to put Christ on in baptism, to start a brand new life, we'll give you the opportunity. If we can encourage you, we want to pray with you. We're going to sing a song, and if we can be a blessing to you, come and let us know. Let's stand. We'll sing together.